Okay, colleague, we start. Welcome to everybody. I hope you have a very good holidays and in full shape for this rentrée, which is very busy in Brussels, but I guess very busy also in several national capitals. I welcome this third dialogue that we do as a European Parliament, in this case as a Constitutional Affairs Committee, with the national parliament. We thought that, and I also thanks to all the shadow for their presence, that it was absolutely necessary when we discuss about institutional consequences of enlargement to involve since the very beginning the national parliament. There was a strong request, but I would say that there is a general consensus here in the European Parliament about this. So I'm very pleased to welcome 20 members from national parliament, parliaments belonging to 8 EU member states, Finland, France, Greece, Lithuania, Poland, Portugal, Romania, and Sweden. And also we have got online 4 candidate countries, parliament, Montenegro, Serbia, Turkey, and Ukraine. So thank you very much, colleagues, for your commitment and your presence. And also I welcome my colleagues, shadow rapporteurs. Here in presence, we have Laurent Vince from EPP and Marc Angel from SND. We have, I think, online also Alexandre Barrault of the Patriots and Rainer von Lanschot of the Greens. I also want to thank for the written contributions a number of chambers of the National Parliament, of some member states, notably Italy, Netherlands, Romania, and Spain. Certainly, I mean, I will come back in my comment also on this written contribution, and also I want to thank for the written contribution the parliaments of 2 candidate countries, Turkey and Ukraine. I won't be long in my introduction because I took already a lot of time in June when we first discussed this draft report. I only would like to emphasize that I am strongly convinced that today the EU has a triple challenge: a challenge of efficiency, a challenge of power, and a challenge of democracy. And that these challenges are amplified with the perspective of enlargement. A perspective of enlargement, which is a strategic priority, which is a strong commitment from our parliament, which is very important for the candidate country and for us from the democracy, stability, and security perspective. It is clear that it has also geopolitical aspect. There is a sphere of influence, a struggle, especially in that part of Europe between us, Russia, China. So, I mean, and the war in Ukraine has made enlargement more urgent than ever. So, I mean, there are very strong reasons to be very serious and consistent with our commitment to enlarge. At the same time, there are challenges which we must tackle in parallel to the enlargement process. Challenges also linked to security and defense. And in our work, which I hope that we will continue, we have try to be as pragmatic as possible, indicating the possibility and the need to fully exploit the possibility of the current treaties, indicated that, however, some at least targeted treaty reform are necessary, but there are several ways of introducing them, and also the fact that if could happen in defense or security, some member state decide to do something outside the treaty, this should be enshrine the treaty as soon as possible after. These are the pillars of our reasoning. I look forward to your views again today. I recall that the interpretation is available in French and English, and I would like immediately to give the floor to the shadow rapporteurs of the European Parliament, and we start with the EPP, Laurent Vince. Laurent, please, with the floor.
Thank you, Rapporteur, and dear colleagues, dear guests from the national parliaments and from candidate country parliaments. I am replacing my colleague, Sebastian Bugaglio, who will continue to work on this file, but today he could not make it to the meeting. In our view, the commitment to enlargement process is obvious of the EPP group. The accession process is demanding and requires genuine transformation in economic, administrative, and judicial matters. We all know this, but we also need to put next to that that when reforms are achieved, then progress must follow on the enlargement process. We will continue to advocate this in the European Parliament. I believe there is a large majority supporting that, because we believe that our own citizens in the EU, but mostly those in the candidate countries, deserve clarity and predictability in their European path. One sign that we take enlargement seriously is that we speak about internal reforms that are needed in the EU to ensure that our institutional structure is able to accommodate the new members. And I hope that the report in its final stage will be able to demonstrate and fulfill this goal. I would have some questions, and maybe those will be the issues that we will touch during the discussion. How do you see the connection between building a strong Europe and pursuing internal reforms, especially in the light of enlargement? Do you believe, especially our colleagues from the member state, that such reforms require an in-depth discussion or even a treaty change, or a targeted amendment of the treaty, or rather not touching the treaty itself? Our main question probably is to look into the fact if the treaties really provide now the adequate tools to address both the challenges of enlargement and future post-enlargement scenarios. We in the Parliament, we remain committed, and our role in the Committee on Constitutional Affairs is to look into the institutional consequences or outcomes of the enlargement process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Laurent. And now, Marc Angel of the SND.
Yes, thank you very much, Sandro, and welcome to my colleagues, rapporteurs here, but also to the colleagues from the national parliaments. Myself, having been a member of national parliament in Luxembourg for many years and chairing the European Affairs Committee, it was always interesting also to analyze in the committee the progress report of the candidate countries. And this work of enlargement is a work that the European Parliament and the national parliaments, we have to work together on these important issues and not against each other, because there is consequences in the member states for that. So I'm really glad that we this is already the second time that we meet the colleagues from national parliaments. It's of utmost importance. For the Socialists and Democrats also, we're very happy that enlargement is finally high on the agenda again, because we have war on our continent, we have some extremism rising up here, and we have this, as you all know, the shift in transatlantic relations. And I think this reminds us that enlargement is in the Union's own strategic interest. In the name of S&D, I would also like to thank the rapporteur, Sandro Gozi, for his excellent draft report, which we amended, of course, but there is nothing that we deleted from that report. That's also an important remark. There was nothing that we did not like in this report. We strengthen a bit the importance of the social dimension, of course, in this, and that's important for us. I would also inform the colleagues, it was sent to you, but I think I would like to thank the European Parliament Research Service for this excellent draft they did towards renewed and beneficial EU enlargement, where it's very clear the benefits of enlargement. Every enlargement so far has been successful, and it is proven by a lot of economic facts on convergent effects on EU enlargements from 1919 to 2023. So it's really interesting, all the data, and we have maybe to explain this also to our citizens, which are sometimes a bit reluctant when it comes to enlargement. So I think this work is important, and we have to spread the words from Brussels into the capitals, but from the capitals into the regions and in our cities and villages. Then, of course, for us, Socialists and Democrats, we know that the union is barely functioning now with 27. Imagine when we are 32, 33, 34, 35, we need to change our rules. And therefore, treaty change is not a taboo in the Socialist and Democrat group. But when we use the word treaty change, we always put an adjective, and it was already used by my colleague, Mr. Vince from EPP, it's targeted treaty change. Very targeted treaty change. I've been very active in the Conference on the Future of Europe. This was also the conclusions and the recommendations of this Conference on the Future of Europe, where we did not alone discuss with citizens, but we had also meetings with members of national parliaments, the Council and Commission, civil society, and the social partners. And I think the outcome of that conference shouldn't be forgotten. And it shows that we can do a lot within the existing treaty, but for certain issues, we cannot go around doing targeted treaty change, which does not mean that we open the Pandora box of writing new treaties, but just adapt them so that we can function better. And one of the bigger issues is the unanimity question, which you see already now when you observe a bit foreign policies, how difficult it is and how blocked we are all the time. So this is one of the priorities of our group also. But anyway, having said that, I'm looking forward to a very good discussion with the colleague rapporteurs here, but also we are listening to what the colleagues from the national parliaments have to say. Thank you for the input from those who gave us some input. It was very interesting, and I wish us a successful meeting today, and I guess it will not be the last one. Thank you.
Thank you, Marc. Et maintenant, je donne la parole à Alexandre Barrault, Les Patriotes.
Yes, but I would like to speak in French.
Oui, vous pouvez.
It's possible.
Oui, you have anglais, français.
Très bien.
Very well.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to speak in French. And I understand what you said, and I think exactly the contrary. So, as some of you know, I am a member of the Patriot Group, the French delegation of the Patriot Group. And regarding the enlargement, I have two things to say. The first thing is very simple. It depends on the countries that are candidates. During our meeting in the parliament, the Turkish ambassador came to see me after my speech and to say, Turkey will not always be what it is today. So one day, you will not be saying what you said now. I am not going to bet on the future. For the moment, Turkey is a country for which the entry into the European, first of all, because it's not a European country, seems to me extremely improbable. The entry of Ukraine in the Union, I can understand the compassion that everyone feels for Ukraine, but compassion is not policy. The entry of Ukraine into European Union will be the death of agriculture in many countries, French country, because Ukraine will take a huge role, play a huge role in the common agricultural policy. I mean, considering the scope of the wheat and grain industry in will kill all the other agriculture in Europe. The joining of Bosnia is not simply because Bosnia has culturally not many common points with the European Union that has volens, nolens, Christian roots. So there's, first and foremost, for our delegation, strong doubts regarding some countries, and we haven't got the religion of the enlargement. The second point, and I heard what my neighbor was saying, I've understood that the enlargement is also a possibility of saying the Lisbon Treaty doesn't work anymore. We need to change the institution. We're too many of them, and being too many of us, the unanimity rule is impossible. The qualified majority rule needs to be changed. So we are making one step more towards a system my group does not want, which would be a reinforced federal European state. And for some, the ultimate dream of a single European state, and that for with the enlargement we're making things more complicated. 27 countries is already hard, already difficult. 32, 33, 34, it's going to be impossible. We will technically sing and say, okay, we need a new treaty, and it's not working, and we'll make the Berlin Treaty or Luxembourg Treaty, whatever you want, to modify the institutions in a sense, either minimum federal sense, which we do not want. We want to stay united in diversity. In diversity. This is what I wanted to tell you. Thank you very much.
Only from the National Parliament. There are 3 minutes for each intervention, and you are free to ask for the floor and to start. So I don't know who wants to start from the national capitals. If you want to have the floor, you should raise your hand digitally, and I give you the floor. Okay, yeah, the representative from Portugal, please, Antonio Rodriguez, you have the floor.
Good morning to all. Thank you for this opportunity. As you can see, I'm not a member of the European Affairs Committee in here in Portugal, but from the Constitutional Affairs. And so I have a different approach, of course, about these issues. But nevertheless, I would like to address the first principle, the political principle that is around this report and that we have to agree. That is, the enlargement should be an aim, should be an objective, as sooner as possible, as soon as each country could manage to achieve all the criteria that proposed in the treaties. And so it's a political project that we have in the European Union, and of course, enlarging the European Union, having as many as countries as possible should be the first principle and the first aim of all. So I'm very in favor of the enlargement, with the conditions that are spread on the report that I would support, because I think that the analysis is very good about all of the challenges that we have. Nevertheless, I have two or three things that I would point out that would be important in our view. First of all, is the people's participation. There can be no longer a development of the European project if people are not quite aware of what is around the enlargement, around the political principle, around the our project, our political project around here. And so it should be always a political aspect to be taken near by the decisions and by the decision makers of all. And when at point, at the point 19 of the report, when you speak that the decisions inside the European Council should be having some kind of a second level of decision to the Court of Justice, I don't believe that there should be any kind of a judicial approach around the decision makers in here in Europe. Two things that we believe that are main problems around this report and around the enlargement. First of all is, of course, the challenge of financial resources. It will be always difficult to have a unanimous decision around this. I think that we have to be more creative and find a way to support financially all the Europe, because each time you enlarge the Union, and of course there are political good reasons for that, but if you speak about financial reasons and you find that you have new taxes around Europe, or that there will be some kind of a commitment from the national budgets, there will be always a major problem to have some kind of a good decision for all. And at a second level, that is, we need some kind of a new creativity to have the representations of the national states inside of the institutions. Of course, we have to reform the institutions. Of course, the unanimous decision will be each time more difficult, but we have to have, in any case, at a first level or a second level, national representatives inside the institutions, mainly inside of the Commission. We know how things roll. If we have some kind of countries that are not inside of the main decisions inside of Europe, besides the Council, but inside of the Commission, there will be a loss of connection between the countries. And it's not a geographic balance composition of the Commission that will give us the answer. Even though if you have some kind, like we have in the national states, ministers and secretaries of states, like we have here in Portugal, but a seven level, but having always somebody from a national country to represent at the decisions so that they have some kind of pressure and some kind of direct influence inside of the Commission for that. So I believe that this report has very good things. They have things that should be thought betterly inside of our discussions, but mainly for the first message will be the last, that is, we support quite a lot, 100% enlargement. We should look towards that, not with temporary solutions, but with a strong political message, not only to the world, but inside our own countries, that Europe needs to be enlarged, that we are a political project that has to have everybody inside of Europe, besides what are the discussions, besides what will be the composition, besides what will be the policy and the decision makers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Antonio Rodriguez. Don't know if there is someone else who is asking for the floor. I don't know if Rainer Leischot has arrived. I got a list of presence here. Probably I will encourage those who are present to intervene if they may wish so. We have the Finnish Parliament, and we have online Johannes Koskinen and Mia Petra Kumpula-Natri. Does the Finnish Parliament wish to take the floor? L'Assemblée nationale française, Marietta Caramanli ou Frédéric Petit, est-ce qu'ils sont en ligne? Bon, pas encore, apparemment.
Apparently, they're not online yet.
We should have Tobias Teich. No. For the Greek Parliament, we have the presence of Anna Mani Papadimitriou. Does Mrs. Mani Papadimitriou wish to take the floor? Okay. From the Lithuanian Parliament, Ruslanas Baranovas or Ingrida Simoniete. Je peux continuer, hein, si vous voulez. For the same, for the Polish Chamber of Deputies, Andrzej Grzyb. For the Polish Senate, Gabriela Morawska-Staneczka. We have already got the intervention of the Portuguese Assembly, which I thank very much. The Romanian Chamber of Deputies, Ovidiu Vasile Cimpean. No? From the Swedish Parliament, Anna Lasses and Ulrik Nilsson. Anna, do you wish to take the floor?
Yes, thank you. I can do it very,
very good.
very shortly then.
Very good. We listen to you.
Yeah. Well, in general, the enlargement is very important. And I think the conclusions and the reflections in the report are in general very relevant. So I hope the work will go on in this area. I think that's about it. Thank you.
Well, Clea, for support. Thank you. I wish all the intervention were easy like that. from the Montenegrin Parliament, Jovan Subotic. Is it there? No. Serbian National Assembly, Elvira Kovac. Jovan Subotic, you have the floor, please, Jovan. You have the floor, but you have to put the micro on. We can't hear you. It disappeared. Lost the connection.
Now he's turning the camera.
Back. Please, try. No, no, we can't hear you. Jovan, we come back to you. I go through the other list, and then in the meantime, you can try to solve your connection problem. From the Turkish Grand National Assembly, we should have Murat Kaid Cingi. Serbia did it, but yes, please.
Hello, this is Faruk Aymakçıakçıl. I am the ambassador of Turkey to the EU. I have just been informed that our member of parliament had a small accident on the way. I think he will be with us in 10 minutes, and I don't know whether I am allowed to participate to this meeting. If I am allowed, I can try to
unfortunately, ambassador, messages. Yeah, thank you very much, ambassador. Great to see you again. Unfortunately, we cannot make an exception, so we have to wait for the members of the parliament. The only one that are allowed to take the floor.
Okay, he will be, I think, with us within a few minutes. Thank you.
Okay, let us know. Elvira Kovac, please, Elvira, you have the floor.
Thank you.
Parliament.
Thank you, distinguished chair, dear colleagues. I believe that after a summer break, technically it is an adventure for all of us. But first of all, I waited for member states, so from national parliaments from member states. That's the reason why I haven't asked for the floor. Thank you very much for having the possibility to be here as a representative of candidate country. I am chair of the European Integration Committee of our parliament. It is an extremely important topic for us, who has been a candidate country for a long time. It was encouraging to hear positive sentences from the representatives of different political groups and shadow rapporteurs. And I read, of course, the whole report and a lot of amendments. Some of them are strengthening us, but believe me, so if it is possible, since I have a feeling that this meeting is now, because of technical obstacles and other stuff, a little bit, I can be frank and honest as always. The most important thing for from the point of view of the candidate countries is this efficiency challenge you mentioned. I think that we can all agree that the whole procedure is a technical one, but so a combination of technical and political one. But it is extremely discouraging if you have been in this procedure and all the time the unanimity of votes needed for every cluster to be opened is for Serbia a disaster. And I believe, unfortunately, colleagues from North Macedonia are not here, not present, but they would say the same. And you all know what I am speaking about. So every time to have an obstacle of bilateral issue or whatever any member states would like to use to block even opening a cluster, which means nothing, but it could be really a positive step, is a huge problem. As someone who is following this procedure with great colleagues from the team, and you all know, sometimes I have a feeling that we are boring. Officially, Serbia is ready for opening a cluster 3 for, I don't know, 3.5, almost 4 years now, according to the European Commission. But every time when we go to the Council and Member States, I believe that we also have our political insecurities and troubles and problems. But this is still discouraging. So we need an efficient mechanism. And there is a possibility every time to block it. But if you see nothing positive, you cannot communicate it among people. And that's the reason why we are tremendously involved and interested in how this reform will go through. I fully understand what the colleague said, that you, from the point of view of a member state and from the European Parliament, you speak about numbers. 27 is also not such an efficient body and complicated everywhere. And you are counting on, you said, 30-something, maximum 35 or so on. How can it be functional? So you have to think about different reforms. But please take into account our point of view, and we are really thankful that we have the opportunity to say it, that it is not normal to need and to ask for unanimous decision for every small steps. Somebody who is who works better with numbers would say, I don't know how many hundred decision and how many possibilities to block the procedure. And for our country, that means no green light, nothing positive in the last few years. And this is so discouraging that the Euroscepticism is on the highest level possible. And unfortunately, the percentage of people who are still for European integration is barely around 40%. On the other side, I would not like at this really important committee to open some political questions. And I know that the part of fault is on our side, but I think that we could all agree that the cooperation between the European Parliament and other European institutions and between the national parliament is extremely important. Therefore, I think this main message is what I planned to tell you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Elvira. We have made the calculation. It's 150, the possibility of putting a veto during the enlargement process of each candidate country. So there are 150 possibility of veto for each single candidate country's process. Don't know if Jovan Subotic has managed to tackle it, his connection problems? No? Anybody else? Who? The Ukrainian? Okay, so I give the floor to the Ukrainian parliament, please. And then to Rainer van Laschot. Okay, we lost our Ukrainian colleague. So, Rainer, you have the floor, please.
Yes, hi. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Sandro, for organizing these exchanges. And although we had some technical problems just now with the Ukrainian parliament, I want to start by saying that I think It is amazing that we've gathered here today from Lisbon to Kyiv, representing hundreds of millions of Europeans. And we all have the desire to live in the same house according to the same basic foundations and the same values. This is the first week after the recess of the summer break. And I think during the summer break, we have seen an infinite amount of examples that show that the EU needs reform, but also that the EU needs enlargement. That's why I'm very happy that we have this exchange now. And I hope that this can be the start of more exchanges and the start of working together more and more as colleagues in the near future. I think in many ways the representatives of candidate countries are already at home here in the European Parliament. But before deciding to really move into a new house, it's important to get a good feeling of the place that you're moving into. A good feeling for the structures, the inhabitants, the rules, because then you know what you're getting into and you can take good care of it and you can improve it with your own design vision. So perhaps what I see as a next step is to grant observer status to all the colleagues from candidate countries. The option as an observer status would be to speak sometimes in plenary, debate in group meetings, and discuss legislation in committees. That way, once these countries, your country, becomes part of the EU, you can hit the ground running. And I think also, in the meantime, we as members of the European Parliament have a lot to learn from the members of Parliament of the candidate countries. So that could be mutually beneficial on the road towards enlargement. I think the 150 steps where countries in the Council can veto the process of candidate countries is awful and needs to be changed. That's why I'm a big proponent of gradual enlargement and already starting with some parts of integration while the entire enlargement process is going on. But what I'm curious about is to hear how you see the observer status, because I've read many times that people are interested in it, but I'm also curious to hear from the members of parliament from these candidate countries if they would like to become an observer and already through that integrate into our parliamentary procedures. Because enlargement, it's not done when the final chapter is closed, but when everyone here feels truly at home. And then this house, our home of European democracy, and already inviting you there can be a good step to speed up the enlargement process and make sure that we both learn on the way to the enlargement. Thank you, Mr. Gozi.
Thank you, Rainer. Now I go back again to Jovan Subotic to see whether he has solved this problem. Apparently also Frédéric Petit avait demandé la parole, mais je ne sais pas si il a lui aussi des problèmes. Voilà. Frédéric Petit, voilà. Vous avez la parole.
Je ne mets pas ma caméra, mais si vous m'entendez, tout va bien.
Frédéric Petit, you have the floor. I don't know if you can hear me. If you can hear me, it's all well. We can hear you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, dear Chair. I wanted to... Frédéric Petit, member of the French National Assembly. For the colleagues, yes, Vice President of the European Affairs Committee, and I'm also an elected representative of the French people living in the Balkans and the Central Europe and in Germany. This is a system we have in France, so I'm talking about my circumscription today. I wanted to give you two elements very quickly. The first one is that I totally agree with our Portuguese colleague. In fact, do not agree whatsoever with the German colleague who has just spoken. I do not believe in a gradual integration. I think that if the European citizens must have a hold on relaunching the enlargement process and refreshing this process, this must absolutely be a solemn occasion. And for that to take place solemnly, very quickly, not tomorrow morning in a few years, but there must really be a kind of refoundation. And then I agree with the German colleague when he says that these are not the chapters. I think that we must mark with our citizens the fact that a great majority of them, even in the countries that appear today as being quite reticent, want to have a common destiny. And therefore, I would quite like if we had a proposal that we had refused democratically a few years ago to say that we should have a first step. A first step where we would say we go together, we want to be together, and afterwards we have the technical side to it. And I think that this could correspond to what the Portuguese colleague stated on the fact that we must go back towards our citizens, and I could see ourselves a great European day where we would see now let's think together. The second thing is that I hear some questions from our colleagues from the Patriots Group, etc., saying that, well, we are threatened, we are threatened. Let's not play our adversaries' games when we divide Europe. Europe is about diversity. We, for the last 24 years and almost 30 now, Europe is made of diversity. Let's not be naive and think we have some friends around us and we must defend each one amongst us. Thank you.
So whether the Turkish member of the parliament has arrived? Not yet. Well, I think that I could give back the floor to our shadows if they have further comments. If in the meantime some member of the National Parliament arrives or manage to solve the problem, they intervene. Otherwise, I will share with them some concluding remarks. So I start again with Laurent Vince. If you want to add something, Laura, of course.
Are you okay? We are open, of course, to continue the negotiations. I think there will be maybe some written proposals, amendments from the member states that can be useful to be included in your report. But full support from our side and good luck in your work.
Thank you. Thank you in our work. In the meantime, I got the Lithuanian Parliament to ask for the floor. Ingrida Simonite, please. No, but please. Rusianas Baranovas, please, you have the floor.
Dear Chair, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to speak. First of all, I saw the list of amendments, so I really feel a little bit even sorry for you having, for 10 pages document, having 130 pages of amendments. I think it's crazy. But what I wanted to say, of course, Lithuania is for enlargement, and we believe it's, first of all, not a challenge, but an opportunity for us, vital opportunity to grow and to become adequate to the tasks we have at hand. And I think it's what we should notice and think about is that candidate countries are much more active even in this session. We heard a lot, you know, and we are, maybe we'll still hear from Turkey and Montenegro and other countries and Ukraine, which are candidate countries, and we can count probably three or four member states who took a floor. So I think it's very, you know, instructive. Because I'm afraid that even in this summer, we saw a lot of, you know, parallel structures, parallel decisions, parallel coalitions of the willing, which, you know, happened before. But I'm afraid that now it's getting to the new qualitative state. And I'm afraid that we are losing interest in European solutions because it's hard, because we have some countries blocking. Don't let me start it about 150 veto opportunities for any enlargement country. If that would be the case when my country was having negotiations with the European Union, we would never be a part of the European Union, I think. So I think it's a big challenge, you know, not to lose interest and to find new ways. And my question would be, you know, we have, and we speak about a lot of different things, what we should reform for enlargement and for other purposes. But if I could ask the rapporteur, if you could outline, I don't know, three, two, or maybe five top priorities in your eye, without which the enlargement would not, I don't know, be possible, or without which enlargement would paralyze our great union. I don't know how many maybe you have in your mind, 2, 3, 5, because, you know, when we have a long, very long list, it's sometimes hard to focus. I think we should, you know, try to prioritize what we must absolutely necessary do and what questions are would be nice to solve, but maybe, you know, if we don't solve them, it's not a tragedy. So thank you so much. And
thank you. Thank you very much. I will come back to your question, of course. Is there anybody else? No? So I go back to our shadow and Marc-Angèle, if you si voulez ajouter quelque chose.
Oui, merci beaucoup. So the first remark was by our Portuguese colleague, and I fully agree with him that people's participation, citizens' participation, is of utmost importance, and that's also why I and I saw also some other colleagues tabled amendments to underline and to highlight the importance of this people's participation. We all know, those who were in the Conference on the Future of Europe, how important it is, and this was also a demand of that, because remember the last convention we had when the Constitution was drafted, which later became the Lisbon Treaty, that was really not a very transparent and a very very democratic. So people's participation is in everything we do very important. Then I would like to thank the Serbian colleague, Elvira Kovac, for her frankness. And I think it's very important that she addressed the Euroscepticism and the fatigue of enlargement in some countries because of this, as she said it very well, this efficiency challenge. And and other colleagues also mentioned these 150 opportunities to veto. And as we know, the Council is the less transparent of our institutions. That's a bit of a problem. So I was wondering, maybe it exists already, but how can we just have a bit of an overview on this vetoes, etc.? They are very timid candidate countries, but do we always get the information quickly enough here to see how we can intervene? I think that would be a question I have. And then the Lithuanian colleague, it was interesting. The amendments, yes, it is sometimes a lot of amendments, but I hope that in the next meeting you will get our compromise amendments where we bring them together. And then that's going to be a much easier list to read. But this is also the beauty of the work we do here, to find compromise between different political parties, but also between the different geographical origins where we are from. So having said that, I'm looking forward to continue this work. And also, I was very happy that many colleagues from the candidate countries were present. And I will also check with my parliament why they weren't present. And I think we should all do that and have on the next meeting a presence of all the 27 member states.
Thank you very much, Marc. Alexandre Barrault, vous avez la parole encore, si vous voulez.
Oui, très brève observation.
Yes, a very quick observation. To reply to what has been said regarding involving the peoples, there is a very simple solution. These are the European elections. The European elections grant the European people the occasion to pronounce themselves. And we have noted with the last elections that the trend was towards strengthening, maybe not strengthening Euroscepticism, but certainly showing a taste for another Europe, and a refusal of just going forward towards federalism and refusing the religion of enlargement. So the European people, of course, they must be consulted, but please beware, you might not get the answer you want. Thank you. We are quite late, but that's okay.
Did you ever come back again? No. Okay, so, colleague, thank you very much. I conclude this meeting. Let me share with you some thought also in the light not only of what which the written Constitution received, but also what you say today very briefly. I think I'm very much in line with Laurent when he said that already talking about internal reform is a sign of that we are serious about enlargement. I think that is probably the best guarantee that we are serious. And also, I agree with Marc-Angèle on the need, and also with our Serbian colleagues on the need to emphasize the benefit of enlargement and to focus more. You have table amendments on the societal and fundamental principle dimension, which is certainly very important in this aspect. Rainer van Lasschot insisted on the observer status. I think that certainly I'm very open to this idea which has been also tabled in written form from the Ukrainian parliament and from the Turkish parliament, so I thank them all. The written contribution from Italy, I say it to put it on the record, and also because I know that the civil servant of the several parliament are listening to us. I'm pleased to see that also the Italian parliament insists on the need to reform Europe before enlarging, and insist on the issue of legitimacy effectiveness, the Union's absorption capacity question raised by Italy in written contribution, raised by Portugal, raised also today by our colleague from the Patriot, is certainly one of the issues that we have to tackle, not only in this report, but in general is a question to tackle in view of the enlargement strategy. The Dutch Parliament, in written form, has insisted to extend qualified majority voting in foreign policy. It's already in the report. Certainly, I support this proposal from the Dutch Parliament, and also to strengthen the use of conditionality. And several groups, and also myself, we have tabled proposal to see how we can make the use of conditionality and the principle of respect of rule of law more efficient in view of enlargement. The Romanian Parliament insists on a stronger application of the principle of subsidiarity and proportionality. This is also, we will try to better reflect this aspect, which we largely share, at least I share, in the report. Similarly to the Dutch Parliament, the Spanish Parliament insisted on the on a more efficient instrument to ensure compliance with the rule of law around Article 7. Also, I own an answer to our Lithuanian colleague. My five top priorities. I mean, in the report, I've been pretty pragmatic, and the list of priorities is not that long. Basically, there are five. Probably, they could be less than five. Certainly. It is unavoidable for me to tackle the issue of decision-making process, and that means the issue of the veto. It's unavoidable to tackle the issue of resources and own resources of the Union. It's unavoidable to see whether, with this treaty, at least starting now, we can answer to the challenge and to the urgent need of more security and defense. I think also that, and not because we are member of the European Parliament, but the issue of strengthening the legislative power of the European Parliament, notably the power of initiative, is something which is absolutely important. And then there is an issue of size of the European Parliament, size of the Commission. I think that these are the unavoidable reform. If I give you, this is my list of five. I don't know what is the list of five of other, but I think that they are not. It is not very different. So I thank again all the shadow. The Turkish are arriving. So let's take 3 minutes to listen to the Turkish parliament, and then I conclude this session. Please, you have the floor. Are you with us from Ankara or not?
Sen beni bir daha koy istersen. Beni de duyabiliyorlar mı?
Şu an duyuyorlar.
Duyuyorsa...
We listen to you, huh?
Please, please, you should get in Mr. Jingle, the MP, not me.
The MP, is he with us? Oh, I don't know.
He's with us, but not pressing any buttons. So maybe you can remind him to press the button.
So the colleague from the Turkish Parliament should press the button if he wants to speak. Otherwise, we close the session.
Now he's turning the camera now.
Okay.
You hear me? Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. Please, you have the floor.
Thank you so much, honorable members of the European Parliament, distinguished colleagues. I am so sorry because of late participant to this meeting, because I had a small traffic accident while coming to the meeting for internet. So I became late. I am so sorry because I was really very ready to talk about some new issues about the report of the Committee of Commission Constitution, and I would like to underline the situation of Turkey in this meeting. But if you allow me, I would just make a summary of what we have talked so far, because I have followed up the meeting. First of all, this report is a very good report with right recommendations and especially flexibility in the accession negotiations, but not unanimity in every phase, because unanimity is a great threat for the enlargement of the European Union and for future policies. And we expect, especially at the accession of new member states, the European Union should apply qualified majority voting to prevent some abuses by several member states. And we support the gradual integration, but we definitely support full membership because observer status is can be deemed as a transitory phase. But it must not be replaced by the full membership of a member state, especially for Turkey. This is a very crucial point for us. And the French colleague Varaut from Patriot said that Turkey is not Europe. You know, very name of Europe comes from Anatolia, actually. And the Bible is written in İznik, in Turkey. And Turkey has been part of the European concert for centuries and is the founding member of the Council of Europe and member of all European organizations. And as you know, we have already signed Ankara Agreement in 1963, and we are struggling to be a part of Europe since then. So this is a very late idea, actually, to discuss about the Europeanness of Turkey. I must underline that. And we are always in supportive and social organizations of Europe. And, you know, our women volleyball team became European champion in 2023 in Brussels. And we can definitely underline the fact that there is no question about the Europeanness of Turkey, and some land of Turkey is already in the European continent, you know. And please make sure that Turkey will be the most contributive candidate to the EU with its power, with its population, with the capacity of production, etc. And no worry for French agriculture, because France will have access to 85 million Turkish market for agriculture, and there must be a fair competition. That is the right way, you know. If you are concerned about Islamization, radicalization, secular and democratic, and EU member Turkey will be the remedy of these social and religious approaches. we totally believe in that. The EU is the continent of values, not religions. And I am sure a secular Turkey will be a bridge, especially between Islamic world and the European countries. Therefore, we cannot deny the fact that Turkey's secular religious position would be only a positive step forward for the European Union. This is an important issue. Otherwise, the European Union would be seen as a Christian club, you know. So Turkey and the membership of Turkey to the EU will prevent these approaches, and with the membership of our country, the EU will be known as the values and multicultural members and Europe. Therefore, we totally deny these objectives and objections, sorry, and we totally believe in European values, and we definitely think that as a Turkish people, Turkey will only strengthen the position of European Union, not prevent anything in social and cultural affairs. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I close now the session. Just before closing, I would like to inform that the draft compromise amendment will be finalized this week, circulated to the shadow rapporteur ahead of the next shadow meeting on 10th of September. And the vote of the draft report is scheduled in our committee on the 23rd of September. And I would like also to thank you all, and last but not least, the interpreters. Thank you very much. Thank you.